In the church at Rome, the followers of Jesus were judging each other. They were arguing with each other. They were rejecting each other. They were despising each other, a very strong word. I know that's hard to imagine in a church, but that's the way it used to be back in the olden days. That's how Christians acted. And unfortunately, we've carried that tradition through 20 centuries. Now, the issues they were arguing about seemed to us very distant and very arcane and unimportant. Do you eat meat or not eat meat? Well, what? Did they have an outbreak of radical vegetarianism in Rome? No. You see, the meat that you could get clearly was not kosher. So those Jewish Christians who did feel, as opposed to Paul's teaching, they needed to keep kosher, couldn't eat the meat. There were other converts who had just a few months before, perhaps, been worshiping the gods and goddesses of Rome, and the meat that they could buy had been sacrificed to those idols, those gods and goddesses. And they weren't quite sure yet if those gods and goddesses were real or not. Now, St. Paul knew they were just figments of the Greco-Roman imagination. But there were some folks who chose to eat vegetables alone because they didn't even want to take a chance on eating meat that was either non-kosher or had been sacrificed to gods other than the God of the universe. And there were those who said, it's not important. Those other gods don't exist. And the ones who ate meat despised and judged the ones who didn't, and the ones who didn't despised and judged the ones who did. Second problem. Certain people kept certain days as special days, and others chose not to. Now, for the early Christians, the first day of the week was an extremely important day because it was the day of resurrection. But many of them, coming from the Jewish tradition, also kept the Sabbath, which began on Friday evening at sundown and lasted until Saturday evening at sundown. Well, the Romans had no tradition of that. The pagan Romans didn't. They just kept Sunday, the first day of the week. And so those who said, well, there are no special days, despised those who kept special days. And those who kept special days despised those who did not. And this has been our Christian tradition ever since. Our need to be right and for others to be wrong means that we divide the world into binary opposites. You either do eat meat or you don't eat meat. And depending on which side you're on, you're virtuous or not. You either keep special days or you don't keep special days. In the Christian church, we've argued about baptism for centuries. You notice we dip water in our hands and we baptize these two young men. But there are those who would say, that's not baptism at all, just not enough water. How much water does it take for God to work? We believe these young men are baptized, absolutely. But that has been an argument throughout the centuries. When we come to the Lord's table, when we celebrate Holy Communion, there are those who believe that those elements actually become in some way the body and blood of Christ. There are others who believe they represent in a significant way the body and blood of Christ. There are others who say they are just symbolic. And we have killed each other over these issues. We have gone to war over these issues. And if you don't think the warfare continues, just talk to someone who's in a church where the worship wars have taken place. Do we have traditional worship or do we have contemporary worship? And the congregation divides and they judge and they despise each other. Well, see, when we do that, when we divide things, like light and darkness, we forget that light is not just light and darkness is not just darkness, but during the day there are various shades of light and darkness. Even at night, various times of light and darkness. Barbara Brown Taylor has a wonderful new book called Learning to Walk in the Dark. She's one of my favorite writers. I would read absolutely anything the woman wrote. She's an Episcopal priest, a college professor. And what she suggests is that over the centuries, we have maligned the dark because that's where we put all the things we fear. And we have even maligned people with dark skin for that same reason. No good reason. She suggests that in the dark is where we encounter the living God. That we come into the presence of God in that place where we can't fully see what's going on. We can't fully hear what's going on. And we experience God in our own limited way, which is the only way we humans can experience God. Well, Paul's solution, interestingly enough, is love. That's what he said last week. Now, does that mean that there are no right and wrong things to do? Of course not. Last week he said whatever falls outside the parameters of loving your neighbor as yourself is wrong. He even lists some of those things. But neither of these activities, eating or not eating, keeping special days or not keeping special days, falls outside that circle of love. What falls outside that circle is the judging and the criticizing and the arguing and the despising. So his suggestion is, whatever you do in worship, do it for the love of God. If you eat meat for the love of God. If you eat only vegetables for the love of God, and don't judge the other who is doing differently. If you keep special days, keep those special days for the love of God. If you choose not to, make that choice for the love of God. Who are you, Paul says, to judge someone else's servant? I am not your master. You are not my master. There was a story that was told by Maurice Boyd. He was an Irish preacher who served the Methodist Church in Ireland and then served in Canada and then served in New York City. When he was serving in Ireland, he was in trouble with one of his church boards and they called him on the carpet. He was a young preacher and they finished their indictment of him by saying, "You must remember, sir, that you are our servant." And he said, "You must remember, sir, that you are not my master. We have but one. None of us is God. None of us is Jesus. None of us is the judge of the universe. The best we can do, the literal best we can do, is to offer the love of God in all that we do. Our limited ways of knowing, our limited mind and imagination keep us from knowing what's in another person's heart. Only God knows that. I've become convinced over the years that Christianity is less about being right and more about being compassionate and forgiving. Because you see, when we look at the light and the darkness, it exists in all of us. Both exist in all of us. We carry them inside us. And we all need that forgiveness that others can offer and that we can offer others. A few weeks ago, I went to a film called Calvary. It's one of the few films that literally left me speechless. As you well know, very few things leave me speechless. I went with my daughter Sarah and one of her friends. And when we walked out of the theater, Sarah said, "Woo, we're going to need to talk about that." And I said, "I'm not ready to talk about it." I almost never say that. In the film, one of the things I appreciated was that every character was flawed, even the, quote, good priest. Every character was deeply flawed. You learn what's going to happen in the very first minute or two of the movie, and you spend the rest of the film hoping it doesn't. In the midst of the film, there's a conversation between the priest and his daughter. Now, he's a Catholic priest, but he had been married previously. When his wife died, he entered the priesthood. His daughter, who had attempted suicide, comes to visit him in this rural parish, and he learns for the first time that she felt abandoned twice. Once because of the work he did out in the world, and the second time after her mother died that he had entered the priesthood. He never recognized that he and his actions had left her feeling absolutely abandoned and bereft. It's a conversation that takes place between them. And in that conversation, she's in Dublin, he's back where he's serving. He says, "You know, I think we focus too much on vices. I think we ought to focus on virtues." His daughter says, like what? What kind of virtues? He said, like forgiveness. She pauses a bit and she says, "I forgive you. Do you forgive me?" And her father says, "Always." I think that is what St. Paul is talking about. That what we do is extend to those things, to other people, those things that invite them to come closer to God. That don't push them away from God, but invite them to come closer to God. That allow them to come closer, even if they come in a way that we don't understand or perhaps don't even approve of. Let me give you one more example. A friend came to worship who's not used to worshiping in United Methodist churches, came with a companion. The friend is in recovery and is very involved in AA. And so when it came time for communion, the friend turned to the companion and said, "Is that wine?" And the companion said, "No." And so that friend could come and take both elements. Now, you'll hear several explanations as to why Protestants, and specifically United Methodists, don't use wine in communion. One is that we were part of the temperance movement, which really is misnamed. It was not a temperance movement. It was an abstinence movement. Okay? And we were. Another explanation is that Mr. Welch, who learned how to pasteurize grape juice so that it didn't turn into either vinegar or wine and would keep, was a Methodist. In my more cynical moments, that's where I land. But you know what our social principles say? They say that we continue that custom so that those who struggle with addictions to alcohol will be welcomed at this table to participate fully. I think that, too, is what St. Paul was talking about. Practicing those practices that welcome others to come closer to God and to stop doing those things that push people away from God. Because you see, when it comes right down to it, in the very end, we serve a God who has given each of us one of those rings. And it's for us to live out the wisdom and the compassion and the mercy. We serve a God that when we say, "Do you forgive me?" God says, "Always." Thanks be to God.